This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project, welcome back to this episode of Getting Fit. This episode, we're going to talk about swimming. Interesting topic because Raf and I have very different backgrounds when it comes to swimming itself, but we're going to talk about kind of our own training history with swimming and then some stuff that you guys can use if you've done swimming or you're thinking about swimming or you've dabbled in swimming or you're a professional swimmer, whatever level of swimming you are, and how it can increase your overall fitness because it's obviously a great tool. And there's so many different ways you can use water to as a training tool if you have access to it. But before we get into it, of course, we've changed our Whoop this year a little bit in a slightly different way. So rather than using a code, we are now using a link. So Whoop want to track our link. So if you guys want to get a really significant discount like you have before, you can go to our link, which is in the description of this episode.
It's $30 US off.
Yes.
So it depends on the exchange rate. I think it's like 45 Aussie.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's pretty solid.
Pretty solid discount. So make sure you guys check it out there. The link is in the description of this episode. Obviously, the Whoop has taken off like crazy. It's been valued at $1 billion, which is awesome.
And they've got a there's an accessory you can get for swimming.
Yes. Yeah, they've got the Hydro Band. Yeah. But interesting, what's been coming out as I've put the Whoop on more wrists than ever in the last, say, 2 months through the holiday period is a lot of people asking, because I wear the Whoop and I wear the Apple Watch, and some people that I'm, you know, kind of, I guess, selling the Whoop to or selling them on the Whoop. They wear a Garmin. You've got a Garmin on as well. And they always want to know what the difference is. And the main difference is that the Whoop is taking more data points per second, per minute, than any of these other technologies. So what that means is anytime you have more data, you have more accuracy. So what I'm finding is the Whoop is more accurate than the Garmin, than the Apple Watch, than these other things. And these other things as well is I feel like the data is not as useful. So Whoop's data is a lot more useful when it comes to like strain, I think, is a lot more useful than steps, for example. And the recovery metric is a lot better than kind of how well rested your body are or how what your HRV is on other apps.
Yeah, just tell you like your sleep.
Or your HRV. And it's not as well interpreted as your recovery metric on Whoop, which includes more than just HRV. It's got a few different metrics that build into it. So definitely worthwhile checking out. Obviously, sleep is a huge part of it as well. It's tracking sleep. But I just like it because you don't have to worry about it. All these other apps, you've got to, you know, remember to keep your watch on. And people don't want to sleep with their watch. And they've got to charge the watch. And, you know, you don't want to wear it in the shower. Or, I don't know, maybe when you go out, you don't want to wear a Garmin or an Apple Watch. You want to switch to the Rolex or whatever it might be. The Whoop stays on all the time. You don't have to think about the Whoop. That's why it's better.
Rolex.
Some people have, like, a normal watch. And they have to put their Apple Watch on to go for a run. I'm like, just keep the Whoop on. It's the easiest thing. That's why I love it the most. Just absolute convenience.
You know what? It doesn't get distracted with the screens. The other ones, like their main focus is they're like tracking your run.
Yeah.
Or like Apple Watches, whatever, like playing music and texting people. This one only is really like your internal metrics. That's it.
Exactly.
So it's the best at it.
Exactly. So, and you can take data and, you know, look at the data on the app. It's just a much better app than these other companies because it's only focusing on training and recovery. So anyway, the link again is in the description of this episode if you guys want to pick up a Whoop band and check it out as well. Just whoop.com. You can also read about it. All right, guys. Also, our favorite company that is supporting us and has supported us for the longest is Activated Nutrients. They're offering their Power Up product, which I've actually started subbing in quite a bit, which is their all-natural energy product, which is, you know, guarana, goji berries, a few other different things that kind of found naturally occurring in plants that help boost it. Cacao as well in there. It's a delicious tasting drink. I actually been having it with ice water. So I've been having my normal shake and then a couple of teaspoons in some ice water in the mornings for the Power Up product. Just to give me that little bit of an extra boost, and I feel like it really carries me through the day without any crashes. And I guess smooths out the caffeine hit as well, but giving me some more consistent energy from food. So if you guys are interested in picking up that product, go to activatednutrients.com. They ship all over the world. It's the Power Up product. Our code is OFFERMMP, one word, for 20% off. You can check that out there. And then finally, guys, last sponsor supporting the show today is True Coach. If you are investing in clients, if you're a coach, you're coaching people online, or you have a gym, you want to improve the client experience and you're using individualized programs. So maybe you might be a PT at Fitness First. Maybe you're a trainer in the park, but you're offering individualized programs. You want to be using True Coach. It's definitely a better experience for your clients rather than sending them Excel sheets, rather than sending them emails or telling them to follow a blog or a Pinterest or something silly like that. Our code when you go to truecoach.co is MMP50, MMP50, and that's going to get you 2 weeks free, and it's going to get you a trial. Oh, sorry, it's going to get you a percentage off your next month, 20% off your next month.
That's 50% off.
50% off your next month. Oh, there you go. So truecoach.co, and then our code is MMP50 when you check out. Okay, let's get into it. So first thing, I think we'll start with Raph. Give us your history of swimming, which I found out this morning is
quite short.
quite non-existent.
So for swimming, I guess when I was young, I just did like safe swimming, and then I didn't do any...
What's safe swimming?
I think it's just the thing with the floaties on. Like, where you learn how to float and, like, you know, someone...
In a pool.
Like, yeah, in a pool.
So okay, so you did do that sort of shit.
But not swimming, like, just like if you... Like, you know, safety swimming. So, like, you know, if you get dropped in a pool, like, you don't drown.
Okay.
You learn how to
but
float.
But you got to have floaties on? No. No, you're learning how to float.
You're learning how to float.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're learning how to float. What I didn't do was any...
Were you old enough to remember that?
Yeah, I think I do. I remember it, and then I remember, like, you got into the bit where you start swimming, like, a length of the pool.
So, were you in school at this point?
Yeah, I think I was just... I was young for my year, so my first year of primary school, so I think four years old, I did it, and then you transition to the bit where you start doing, like, laps of the pool that my older brother did, and I refused, so I would just jump off the diving board. I have a diving board there.
Okay, so you learn how to float.
Yeah, so I could go
so
in
you
and
learn
float.
How to survive. Okay.
And then I spent time in the ocean. So I did like surf life saving.
How old were you then?
I did that all the way till 13.
Okay.
So I was the worst at swimming in the surf life saving.
So what's the youngest you started surf life saving?
You go from 5 till 13.
5?
Yeah, it's a fucking young.
They've got
like 7
5-year-olds that can't swim going out into the ocean.
Because I think it's they don't even push you out straight out into the ocean. Yeah, I think it's 7 years of surf life saving. Maybe you finish at 12. So it's
get your bronze
there.
Medallion.
That was incredibly challenging for us. At the very end, you have to get a bronze medallion.
Yeah.
And it's actually, like, if you swim at all, it's so easy, right, to get your bronze medallion.
Yeah, it's supposed to be easy, right?
It's a complete joke. This was, like, the hardest challenge of my whole life.
Because you can't swim.
I ended up getting the bronze medallion. But it is not hard to get. So, like, if you told someone to swim, hey, this test, they're like...
Like, I could go get it now.
It's, like, would be a third of the speed of what you'd warm up at if you did swimming training.
Yeah.
It would probably be, like, it would be like 5 on a beep test.
Right.
You know, like, just broke out into a jog, and this, like, I nearly drowned trying to get this test.
What is the test to get the bronze medallion?
I don't know what it is, but it's like very few laps of a pool.
Okay.
In an ocean water pool. Now I'm thinking about it. I don't even know if I ended up passing. But I remember trying. So I think like in the end, like they're like winking and nod. It was like, yeah, dude, you got it. So I could be a lifesaver. But they're like, bro, you are never going the fucking water.
When am I on the schedule next? Book me in for never.
Well, they were scheduling me, but it was just like getting Maccas and stuff for the other lifesavers. So anyway, so that was it. I didn't do any other swimming. And then a few years ago, I tried to get back into swimming. And the technique I used was total immersion swimming.
So before we dive into that, the reason you didn't learn swimming is because your parents were against it, right?
Yeah, well, my dad was like, he just sucks at swimming. Don't even bother.
Yeah.
He thought I was too black to do swimming.
But you live in Bondi.
Yeah, well, he's like, no. He's like, you gotta be safe in the ocean. That was the thing. Gotta be safe in the ocean.
Okay.
So, like, big waves can't scare you, stuff like that.
Okay.
But you do not need to learn how to, like, swim from one length of the pool to the other.
Well, there you go. Fair enough.
So, never did it.
There's the logic.
So, I guess I was like, whatever, like a 13-year, 15-year break or something. No, more than that, like a 20-year break. And then I got back into it and I was looking for, like, how do you learn swimming when you don't know how to swim? I was like actively looking for that. And
what was the reason that made you want to do that again?
I think I wanted to, like, have more well-rounded fitness. Oh, well, we did a bit of swimming in CrossFit and I, like, failed miserably, obviously.
Yeah.
So that was, like, a bit of an eye-opener. We actually did a few swimming sessions together, if you remember.
I remember, like, having to swim around you multiple times.
Yeah, yeah. So I did do a bit of swimming at that point. And then I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, it's never going to be at regionals. Yeah. Probably won't make it across the game.
It was only that one comp in Perth.
Yeah,
that we had to swim
we actually
for.
Had
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And I actually didn't come last. The other guy that like literally couldn't swim. I don't know if you remember.
I don't know. I think I came second.
No, there was a genuine guy that I thought was just going to drown. Like,
right.
It was clearly his first time in a pool.
Oh my
but
God.
He knew how to deadlift. Like,
it was
kilos.
Rowing, double unders, and swimming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was so dizzy when I came out of the pool. I couldn't skip. Like, I was falling over. If you don't know how to swim, you come out exceptionally dizzy. And like, I think I swallowed water.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a rough day. So I looked it up and I found this. Tim Ferriss made it really popular. It was already very popular, but, you know, it didn't have, like, wide mass appeal. I think Tim Ferriss, like, put it massive on steroids.
Like he does with anything.
Yeah, because he learned from basically no swimming to he did, like, a full open water swim. So I paid for the coaching and the courses and stuff for that. Not, like, the higher levels, but the basic levels of it. It is basically a program not to get you to, like, win a gold medal in swimming, but to teach you how to swim more effortlessly rather than, like, thrashing around in the water.
It's not about speed. It's about efficiency.
Yeah, the concept being is, like, I think it's, like... 97% of your movement in the water doesn't propel you forward. So only 3% of your movements are actually projecting you forward. Like Michael Phelps is only 8%.
Mm.
Only 8% of his movement actually pushes him forward. And I think a dolphin is like 50%, something stupid. So they're trying to improve that in you. And it's really good. And I did that course. I can't say it made my swimming any faster, but it got me from swimming like, I could just probably get to the end of the other end of the pool. So I guess that's 50 meters.
Mm.
Could have been 25 actually, small pool. And I swam a 2.5 kilometer ocean swim quite slowly at the end of that.
Mm. That's very different to my experience with swimming. So even though I didn't grow up quite as close to the beach as you, many of my family holidays were spent as beach holidays.
But very strong beach culture up across that side of the bridge.
Yeah, so on the north side of the bridge.
It's probably a stronger beach culture.
Definitely. Mm. Yeah, so I went to school, even though our school wasn't near any beaches, it was close enough to the northern beaches. And if you know the northern beaches of Sydney, the beach culture around there is a lot stronger than
the beach culture.
Yes, diehard surfing. Okay. Like all my mates from the northern beaches, they all surf. Yeah. They were all surf lifesavers and they're all beasts in the pool. So the standard at our school was like very high for swimming. So like the swim squad and the surf lifesaving and the surfing culture at our school, if you were in that group, and I was involved in all the different cliques at school, it was very competitive. We talk about swimming all the time. You wanted to be on the swim team. It was cool to be on the swim team. So I was good at swimming in primary school before high school, which is before the age of 13. And naturally, when anyone says, oh, like you're quite good at swimming, like I'd win some swim events or whatever, you know, you want to do swim squad. Mm. So I started swim squad in primary school. I did a lot of swimming, but I didn't really like it. And then in high school, because all of a sudden it became cool to be a good swimmer because you're now part of the crew of boys that did surfing and they were all jacked and they're all ripped.
Mm.
You wanted to be in the swim squad because like swim squad guys were like, some of the cool guys at school, because rugby wasn't that huge at the school for us. Soccer wasn't that huge. No sport was major.
Mm.
Rugby league was our biggest sport, but I didn't play rugby league. Mm. The next coolest sport, just by virtue of who was doing it, was swimming, was a swim squad. So I always wanted to be a cool kid, so I wanted to be in the swim squad. So I was always the worst swimmer in the swim squad, but I was in the swim squad. Mm. And there was only like 6 or 7 guys in the swim squad. The only thing I didn't do, which was in the swimming stuff that our school was really good at, was water polo. I never played water polo. I played it a little bit for fun, like with some of the swim squad guys, but I never tried to try out for that team. It just never appealed to me. Anyway, so I wanted to be... So during the early years of high school, I didn't do a lot of swim squad. I just tried to make the team each time the swim carnival came around. And I dabbled in it. But in the last few years, as I got older, from like ages 16 to 18, is I did swim squad full time. So that meant 4 or 5 days a week, I would swim for 2 hours in the morning. And then some days I would come in for a double day. I'd do 2 hours in the evening. So I was swimming somewhere between sort of 4 to 8 hours a week, like pretty aggressively as well. Like I remember I started in a slightly worse squad in like the not advanced squad. And then by like 6 months in, I was in the advanced squad, which was like like insane. Like these guys have been swimming their whole life. Some of them were in the state, like they're swimming at the state level. So they swam in their own lane in the session. And like some of the speeds that they would go at was ridiculous. But that was really my first exposure, I was telling you, in sport, in any sport that I played, where it was like we were working all kinds of different aspects and drills and techniques, and we had proper coaching, we had one-on-one stuff, we'd have to buy different equipment and stuff. Like the swim bag you rocked up with to the swim session was like, it was like a full duffel bag full of stuff. So you had like front-facing snorkel, you had like side snorkel, you had fins, you had like handboards, you had kickboards, you had like different...
It's like the powerlifter at the Globo Gym that gets really into it.
Yeah.
Comes in with like a suitcase.
But you had to have it. You had to have it. It was absolutely essential because they'd be like, all right, cool, we're doing like snorkel 1K or whatever, and you do like your snorkel kick. You had to have them. They couldn't just be like, oh, no, it's like powerlifting. Well, like, oh, no, I'm not using a belt.
It's like by the end of our CrossFit careers.
Yeah.
At the start of CrossFit, I had like nothing.
Yeah.
By the end of CrossFit, 4 different shoes.
Yeah, but I mean like, it'd be like a skipping rope. And it's like, hey, we're doing double ones. Like you had to have it. There was nothing optional in that bag. You know, it wasn't like, oh, I've got like the cool racing goggles or whatever. It's like, no, you had tools that we were doing drills with that you had to have. And if you didn't, you had to sit out, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was swimming super hard. And I guess that obviously just developed what I didn't really realize at the time, but like an insane level of swimming, swim ability compared to the average person. And I guess what it also taught me was like competing in swimming, which is obviously like, I guess, really foreign to someone like who's done some swim squad and stuff, but going to a carnival and a tournament and lining up in the laneways and, you know, going in the Olympic pool and stuff and doing your practice, your warm up, like And like you knew your times really, really well. So you were getting drilled on times all the time. Like, literally, you finish the race, look around, and the first thing you do is go to your coach and be like, what was my time?
Yeah, of course.
Or you look at the scoreboard and be like, okay, what was my time? Because that's the only thing you cared about. So yeah, we did all kinds of interesting drills and stuff, which I ended up carrying over a little bit more into, I guess, some of the CrossFit stuff that we use. Like I was teaching you guys some drills and some techniques and that sort of stuff. And it just was a little bit eye-opening to me as well that no one had done anything close to this stuff, even though everyone could swim. I realized the level of swimming that I was at, and I wasn't even that fast. Like in the swim team, like I said, I was the slowest person. But I guess it's just you don't realize how far ahead you get to other people because everyone's, you know, whether you're doing rugby or cricket or soccer at a high level, you're getting your head in those sports, but everyone's still running. Everyone's still playing a sport. Exactly. So, like, you don't get too far ahead.
It's the same sport as running, except everybody runs.
Yeah, but when I'm doing 8 hours of hardcore swimming in a pool and no one is getting in a pool for years, it's like you're getting super far ahead of everyone else. But I think really what put the icing on the cake for me in my swim, I guess my swim career, if you want to put it that way, or whatever, my swim sporting very slim moment was we had this event that I don't think you guys had, but it was really big at our school, which was, it was like a biathlon. It was like a run swim. So it was this, it was called the Champagne Gold. It was like named after the founder of the Morris Brothers School. But it was this swim run event that every year would go on and it was like bragging rights for the whole year. Now I was never in contention to win it because it was always these two guys, Brad and Harrison. They were like the best swimmers at the school. They're both like, one was an insanely good swimmer, but one was a really good lifeguard. So he had swimming and running. His swimming wasn't better than him, but his running was better than him. So they would battle out because it was like 1K run. It was maybe like 200 meter swim and it was like 5 rounds. And so it's a hard event. And I remember that event when I was at the peak of my swim fitness. I remember doing that event on the last year because like this is the last one we're ever doing. It's like bragging rights for life. We're all the biggest. Like everyone's like sort of hit puberty by this point. And so it was like a big event. And I was like, I just want to finish top five. I just want to finish top five. And I was battling out fifth spot. So like first four spots are like miles ahead, right? Like the best lifesavers in the school. Forget about it. You weren't going to touch them. And then me and this other guy are battling out for fifth. And he was the best runner in the school. So he was the best cross country runner. So he had the best like 1K time, the best 2K time, best cross countries. He's really skinny kid. But his swimming was super average. And so what would happen was we'd dive in, do the ocean swim, swim out to the buoy, come back, start the run. But the run's longer than the swim. But by the fifth round, if you can't swim...
That adds up.
It adds up. Yeah, so adds his last swims were getting so slow because he was having to sprint his runs and pass me on the run because I'd get out of the water so far ahead of him. He'd sprint, catch me down. But because he was breathing so hard, by the time his swimming fell to pieces, he was like doing survival stroke by the last thing and I'm getting fifth. And so that for me, I was like, this is like being able to go from, and I guess triathletes know this, but being able to go from running really hard on land and then diving into the water and being able to just go straight into swimming and like not feel like you're drowning is like a whole different skill in itself.
Yeah. And it's painful. I also did that. I've done a few times a run swim event where you like run and you swim and you run and you swim for like 20 kilometers, whatever it is. And that is the hardest bit.
Oh, it's so
being able to swim when you're tired. Like, I would like training and practicing. Okay, I'm ready. I got it. And then I would just jump in the water. I just stand still. Yeah. I'd just be still.
Yeah. And then another funny story is I was actually recruited one year. This is one for the CrossFitters. Alethea Boone. When she went to the CrossFit Games, I think her first year, she like got disqualified at the swim event or she came last or something. It was like,
yeah, I think I remember this. Yeah.
Anyway, the next year, her coach started recruiting me to teach her some swim lessons. And this was a real eye-opener for me with like how hard swimming is to pick up in adult life.
Yeah.
No matter how gifted you are as an athlete on land, it's like a totally different ballgame in water that you take for granted growing up in the ocean and growing up in pools your whole life. And like I had a pool in my backyard. So, you know, just randomly throughout, you know, summer, I would spend, you know, 2 hours a day in my pool trying to set a record how many underwater laps I can do. Mm. And, you know, I'm hitting 12, 13 laps underwater sort of thing. You know, small pool, 10 meter pool, whatever. But, you know, other kids aren't doing that. You know, you just take it for granted. And we did this drill with her. And the drill is basically, it's a breathing drill that you get started with. And what it helps to do is it helps to get you to use your whole lung capacity and get used to breathing a little bit out of breath. And so what you do is go to the deep end of the pool, jump in, you push off the bottom, you take one breath, and then as you drop back down, you blow all your air out, you sit at the bottom for as long as you can, then you push back off the top, come up for a breath, blow all your out as you're going down, sit at the bottom, wait till you need to do it, and you just do that for like 20 reps, right? So it's a pretty comfortable drill, it's nothing crazy, you're just kind of jumping up, take a breath, breathe it all out. Anyway, so we finish that drill, and halfway through, Alethea pulls out, she's crying. bawling her eyes out, freaked out. I'm just throwing you under the bus here, hard. But she was in a full panic. I reckon it took probably 15, 20 minutes. She thought she was going to drown. She thought she was going to die.
She probably was.
I don't know. But it's such a basic drill. It's just a breathing drill. And she freaked out so much, we had to do it in the shallow end. And we had to basically do it where we just bobbed our head underwater because she freaking out sitting down at the bottom of the pool without air. And she just wasn't used to that. And so it made me realize, okay, this, you're taking for granted how hard swimming is in adult years. So when you brought to me, I'm doing immersion swimming, I was like, oh, this is a big thing.
Mm.
It's like a big thing for a lot of people. Because the whole bubble I grew up in, everyone knew how to swim. Everyone was good at swimming. So I didn't realize how important stuff like this is for other people. So I don't know, listening to these stories, which camp you sit in,
or somewhere as a listener. Middle. But you got the polar opposite.
Yeah, but you've got opposite ends of the spectrum here. So essentially, I think we're pulling really nicely from both worlds as to like what is useful, and we've got good perspective. We're both sitting here, elite level swimmers. It's kind of hard to relate.
Also,
right?
Even body shapes. I was told that total immersion swimming, I have the worst possible body shape.
Giant ass.
She did. Well, she said that like the way my ass sticks out, she's like, it's like a rudder, like because the water is hitting that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like you're carrying not only your bottom heavy, which is already bad, because then your whole body is. Your legs are lower than your head, so you're dragging water. But then that arch in my lower back...
Yeah, it's slowing you down.
It's slowing down. You want to flat.
Yeah. Yeah, if you watch the best swimmers, like you watch Phelps swim, you watch him like the side angle.
Yeah.
And you look at the water, how it moves over his back. It's like pretty flat.
Mm.
You know, it's moving pretty well.
I got like a small wave.
You got this... It's like dragging an anchor, bro. Dragging a giant anchor. Okay, so we want to run through a few different things. Obviously, now we've got our story. There's a few different aspects to how you can use, I guess, swimming... firstly, kind of building your way up to making it more useful if you want to get better at swimming, but then also all the way to using swimming as a tool to gain more fitness as you become more confident with swimming. So I think the first and one of the more fundamental parts, and I think you can probably speak to this better than I can, but learning how to float. I know floating is one of those, the better you are at floating, obviously the easier it is to swim. If 80% of your body is underwater and you're trying to move across the water, it's a lot harder than if you can float most of your body on top of the water, which is why they banned those suits, those full body suits, is because it would give you a 5% lift out of the water so you swim faster. If you've ever worn a wetsuit before, it's easy to float because you're full of water and you just float across the top. So learning how to just figure out floating better, I think it's just a matter of just spending more time in the water. But I don't know, I just always knew how to float. I think I just naturally figured it out. Did you do floating drills with this immersion swimming thing?
You actually don't, interestingly, because the point of total immersion swimming is you actually swim more under the water. That's why it's called total immersion swimming.
Oh, really?
Because like more of your body is underwater.
Mm.
So a lot of it is quite different, but it is still like a requisite skill. Man, it's like being able to stand before you fucking squat.
Yeah.
If you don't have that good floating ability, you just panic when you get in the water. When I struggle with floating, and I always do because I'm just like, I guess I'm just not the right body composition or whatever for floating, if you just panic when you get in the water, if you feel like you go straight to the bottom. So it is a really good skill, and then you can manipulate, you know, where you are in the water as well. So it really is step one. And what I learning to float is it's like not as hard as it seems. You like jump in first time, you're like, it's impossible. And once someone shows you technique, you're like, oh, easy.
Yeah, and I think maybe if you can't figure out floating just by itself, is like treading water is probably the next thing. I remember, now this was a little bit different. One of the things that we used to do, one of the drills we used to do, was we do 10-minute floating of dolphin kick. So you jump in, and so dolphin kick is the one where your feet are together. It's like when you dive in at the start and you're like doing the two feet together.
Yeah.
So like one of the strength drills we would do is we'd do dolphin kick and freestyle kick floating. So we'd put a 10-minute timer on the clock. And then the coach would just sit on the edge of the pool and he'd go, all right, cool, dolphin kick. And so you'd have to dolphin kick and keep your head above water. And he'd be like, all right, guys, all right, freestyle kick. Freestyle kick's a little bit easier to float. And then he'd be like, all right, cool, one arm in the air, two arms in the air. And so you'd be like dolphin kicking, two arms in the air, and trying to keep your head out of water. But you go for 10 minutes as a warm-up. What it tells you is like, okay, when I'm trying really hard without my arms, I can stay above water for 10 minutes. And I think... just the, I guess, scaled back version of that is just tread water, like with your arms, with your legs, just stay relaxed, just calm, and just try and do it for 5 minutes in the deep end. Try and do it for 2 minutes in the deep end. Build that confidence that, hey, I can just float. I can stay here. It's actually less effort than I think, because I think that's what you said. You panic, so you start going max effort to keep yourself above water. What you realize...
That's stage one in dying in the water.
Yeah.
That is stage one in dying.
Yeah. Panic. Well, you realize it's like, okay, my goal is to tread water. The ledge is right there. I'm going to try and not touch the ledge for 5 minutes. Be as efficient as possible. Just move your arms slowly through the water. It's like, oh, you can actually tread water with very low effort. Very, very low effort. And I think understanding that, like you said, like mentally more than anything, helps you to conserve energy and realize, okay, it's easier than I thought. I'm not a swim coach, so I'm just talking about mass here. Okay, next one is breathing. Obviously, I just talked about one of the drills, but breathing and learning how to breathe properly, and as some friends of mine that are English are kind of teaching themselves swimming at the moment, what I realized is there's all kinds of different basic drills, but one of the things that kept coming up for them is the timing of how you breathe air out and when you breathe air in. And so I think one thing that people forget when they're breathing and swimming is that right before you go to take a breath, you need to be breathing your air out underwater. So you don't want to turn your head out of the water, breathe out in the air and then breathe in. So you actually want to breathe out your air underwater and then, not all of it obviously, but breathe out a little bit and then take a breath in before you do it. So working on the breath out and the breath in the water and out of the water is a pretty important part of you know, learning how to swim efficiently.
Yeah, and a little technique I got, which is I think quite good if you are in that bucket of just being really heavy in the water because you do a lot of weights training and stuff like that, is my coach would have me just hold more air in my lungs as I was swimming. So you still breathe out, like you said, I would make the same mistake. I would breathe out as I put my head up. But she's like, no, you're probably like, you know, I probably feel that my breath maybe 50% as I'm swimming. She's like, no, fill it up like nearly 100% because you struggle so much with not sinking in the water that the more air you have, the like higher you'll be.
Mm.
You know, it's like, yeah, the more air, if you let go of your air, you sink to the bottom.
So right before you push off, she'd make you take a bigger breath in?
Yeah, well, just every time I would breathe in the water, you know, I would try and fill up all the air in my lungs rather than fill it up half.
Right.
Because I was just like taking a quick breath, right? My head up, quick breath. Head up, quick breath. Lots of quick breaths. But I wasn't filling up all the air I could. When I started filling up all the air I could, what happens, I just floated higher in the water.
So does that mean you spent more time taking a breath? So your head was out longer?
No, I would just make sure I exhaled, like you said, a bit more while I was while I was actually swimming. So that by the time I went up, I was ready to take in a lot of air. And then I would just breathe in just more fully.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just take a bigger breath.
Because if your head's out of the water for, say, a second, if half the second is breathing out and half the second is breathing in, you're getting less versus if you breathe it all out and then the full second is spent breathing in, you have more
air. That's what worked for me. And it did really help, just having more air when I would put my head back underwater.
Yeah, yeah. Now, one of the things you can do is you start to get this timing of the breathing, I find, is useful as a more advanced drill to increase fitness. One of the drills that we used to do in swim squad was, and I know this might not be most appropriate in a 50-meter pool, but you could potentially do this at a 25-meter pool or maybe at halfway in the length of the pool that you're doing, is to increase the amount of strokes between breaths. So when most people start swimming, they take one breath every two strokes. We're talking about freestyle, right? So left stroke, right stroke, breathe. And that what that does is it means you're breathing from the same side every single time. Now, when you're taught, you know, race swimming, is that you want to breathe as little as possible, depending on the distance. But at a very minimum, try not to breathe every second stroke. Usually, you'll see professional swimmers only breathe every second stroke if they're like in the locker and they're like really pushing the end of their capacity. But generally, it's going to be every three strokes, and that helps to balance left and right side breathing. And that's important as for swimming technique, but less important for the immersion swimming, is because you want to learn to be nice and straight and even on both sides when you alternate. Because some people are really weak if they're not used to one side, and then what happens is they extend their arm, they go to breathe, they kind of twist and they turn and they slow down because they're only used to breathing on one side. But anyway, the drill was every lap you'd put a stroke in between the breaths and you try and get as far as you can. We had the guys in our squad, so you know, breath every four, breath every five. I think my best was maybe like a breath every 11-12 strokes. But at this point, you're already going 8, 9, you know, 7, 8, 9, you're doing multiple laps and you're making it harder and harder as you go. So you're pretty tired. It's like a beep test, right? It's getting faster, the beeps, and the frequency of the beeps getting, and you're more tired because you've done all the running before. That's kind of how it feels. We had guys that would end up and they would finish and they finished their last lap without a breath after doing all those drills, you know? So like that's the level that some of these guys in the squad were swimming. I was nowhere near that level.
It builds your lung capacity.
Big time. Yeah. That's what it does. And you'll start and you'll be like, oh, okay. I only got to four.
It's not that different to a lot of the breathing drills you do when you do like a breathing workshop.
Yeah.
You train your ability to like tolerate carbon dioxide buildup.
Yeah. And that's what it is. And like the jumping up and breathing down I talked about with Alethea, you're just practicing timing and coordination of breathing and carbon dioxide tolerance. Just all that stuff. It's like when you do the nose prep work, the Patrick McEwen stuff, and you go on the bike, you do 20 seconds holding your nose, and then you take a breath or whatever, same thing. You're just building your body's tolerance to CO2 and oxygen level. So that's just a different version of it in the pool. Okay, so next thing, which I guess we kind of went over before, but yeah, I guess there's swimming from a fitness perspective and there's swimming from a recreational perspective. I guess recreation is pretty straightforward. You know, you're going to the beach, hanging out with mates, just floating around the pool, or you're in a pool, you're not really training for fitness. Now, I would say that when you are training using swimming as a fitness tool, there needs to be a program. There needs to be some kind of, okay, I'm going to do 2 laps nonstop, and then I'm going to take a 1 minute rest, and then 2 laps nonstop. It needs to be some structure and build up. And without that, obviously, it's hard to progress in swimming. Obviously, when you do, you did immersion, I'm sure there was a program, right? There was a progression through the drills.
Yeah, it's an interesting take on it. I mean, there's two ways to look at it. There's like one way to look at it, which is like, hey, if you just do not care about how you're swimming, you just want the cardio benefits of it, right? And you're just like, oh, it's good low impact cardio.
Yeah.
And I guess you can just follow a program, swim like shit, and you get fitness benefits, right? Sure. I look at my whip when I'm on there, like, yeah, I work really crazy hard actually when I'm swimming. But yeah, if you want to, I guess, get better at swimming while you're doing the fitness, then particularly if you're coming into this not great at swimming, there needs to be a huge emphasis on like swimming well and then times when you're pushing the fitness. So like most of the session, you're focusing on swimming well, right? Maybe doing the lap in less strokes than before.
Yeah.
And then there's a period where you're focusing on like getting more out of breath. But if you just treat it like your air bike workout, it's going to go, you're just going to swim like absolute shit.
Yeah. I think for some people with the frequency they want to swim is that's just how they want to do it. They don't want to spend time on technique. They just want the fitness benefits. And
But you know, for most people, even when I was trying to get the technique right, it was still getting me fitness benefits. So exactly. I do think it's the right way to go.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, like, if you're going to invest that time in the pool, learn how to swim.
Yeah.
Learn how to swim better.
There was the early days of CrossFit when swimming just broke into CrossFit. They did like a CrossFit.com video on, was like that, how that original guy, I think Pat Barber was doing it, right? It was like deadlifts and swimming. He did it and he's like, yeah, it was epic and it looked cool. I was like, oh, this is like pretty sick. It was like heavy deadlifts and rounds of swimming. And then some like swim coach, whatever comes on, he's like, this is a disgrace. and then he ended up going back and like CrossFit divided him out to do a thing. And it was just like, guys, it was like, that's like whatever. I kind of like, but he's like, you're just thrashing in the water.
Yeah.
And every lap just got worse and worse. And by the end, it was like, I couldn't even watch it. He's like, no, let's do some drills where we like try and do good laps.
Yeah.
You know? And I think, yeah, you still get fit with it. And I would encourage people to, if you just go and you do the same thing every time and you get really tired, probably swim like shit.
Yeah, it's just like watching people do poor breathing technique on an air bike. You go, well, let's spend time
improving this. You'll
be more efficient.
And you're still going to get fitness benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's always worthwhile working on technique. I don't think there's ever a time where it's not worthwhile. But yeah, following a program can be helpful and a good program builds technique into it. It goes, okay, we're doing a total of kilometers work today.
Yeah.
The first 300 meters is going to be kick drills. It's going to be, you know, side drills. It's going to be breathing drills. The next 300 meters is going to be, you know, timed or whatever. The next three is going to be, you know, about slow and technique or whatever. And you've done a kilometer, but you've worked on different aspects of swimming. It's worthwhile. Yeah,
but when I did this program, what was really good about the program is there's different, there's not just times. Like, because you're like, how am I getting better? There was a few different things. There was like the test on, say, how many, if I could do the lap in less strokes, right? That was like one test. How many strokes it take me to do a 50. Then it was also like, how long are the intervals taking, right? That's like another one. Then it was also just like, how many kilometers? Probably the biggest one. How many Ks in the whole session?
Mm.
And by the start, it was like, after 500 meters in the session, I was like out, right? I was like, I'm like, no, I literally can't be in the water anymore. But then by the end, like, yeah, you can get a few kilometers done. And maybe the other two metrics haven't got better, but your tolerance has built up.
Mm.
And that's, I find, really motivating if you follow a program
because
you see each one of those things get better.
Yeah. And to build on that, exactly the same thing. If you get better at swimming, you can actually access more energy systems as well. If you're just used to choking on air and water, you're always going.
I would never be under 160 beats per minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
The second I touched the water, it was just the top.
But I would also say you can't access the max power end of the spectrum and the lactic work that I probably could have as well, where you go, okay, I'm going to do a 50 meter sprint here and I'm not going to take a breath.
Well, that would happen when I was just drowning. I would go anaerobic because there's no access to oxygen.
Yeah. I know, but that's more of a panic state. It's not really intentional. It's like, I'm dying.
No, it's a perfect point. And I also can't do, and I haven't got the adonis, one of my goals. I wanted to be able to do like low intensity cardio.
Yeah.
So I couldn't do 120 beats per minute.
Recovery session.
So like if you looked at my whoop data in a session, it was like 160, 160, and then we'd go down to 100.
Yeah.
Because I'd be out of the pool.
Yeah.
Or I'd just stand on the bit I could stand. And then I'd go back to 160.
Yeah. But I'm sure there was, I mean, you probably felt like you got close to it, but like we used to do drills and sessions where we would purposely build up lactic, like to the point where it felt like I'd be doing air bike sprints and I get out and I can't walk.
No, I can't get that.
Yeah, like we got full body lactic where it honestly felt like you're in mud because you're purposely pushing the threshold. You know, the coach might say, okay, dive in. It's got to be half underwater, like the first dolphin kick, and then you come out and you get one breath to the wall, and I want full pace sprint. And you do like three of those with a full recovery. By the third one, you take that one breath and you're like sprinting to the wall, and you're like, the only thing in your brain is breathe, 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 breathe. Like you're in full panic mode, but you're trying to stay relaxed and you're sprinting your technique to the wall. You do, it's like when you sprint on an air bike, you're going, ah, and your whole brain just going faster, faster, faster. And the pain doesn't kick in until the minute, 2 minutes after. And then that's when your body starts seizing up. That's what we do. We do a variation of that in swimming.
That's what you can look forward to. And I think that's one of the best ones. If you improve your swimming, you can do all the different, you can train your body every way. If you suck at swimming, you can just thrash at 160 beats per minute.
Yeah. small death. Okay, so last point we want to touch on is different strokes. Like you've got freestyle, you've got backstroke, breaststroke, and you've got butterfly.
Total immersion, unfortunately, is just freestyle.
Yeah. Now, I would say probably the most useful techniques that you would need is probably breaststroke and freestyle. Freestyle is obviously a bit faster and is probably the one that most people try and get good at. And breaststroke is great because it's like the endurance stroke, right? Like obviously, when you learn racing technique for breaststroke, it's very different. But most people use breaststroke as a cruisy stroke. It's a great stroke to just float around in a pool and get from end to end. Like, if you had to float, I don't know, maybe you're drinking cocktails in Miami at a pool party or whatever. You don't want to like freestyle over to your mates. You want to cruise over.
Backstroke.
Or like butterfly. you want a cocktail? Yeah, let me just butterfly my way over there. You know, like it's not really a thing. But I would say butterfly and backstroke. Backstroke can be useful, but for a lot of people that haven't trained it properly, they end up just kind of like going around in a circle or whatever, or disorientating themselves or hitting the lane ropes. And I don't find this that useful. I think it's useful to be able to swim on your back, but a survival stroke is like backstroke, but with a breaststroke kick. I don't know if you've ever done that before.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's survival stroke. Yeah. So you can breathe the whole time, but you're doing like this cruisy breaststroke style kick thing. It looks a bit silly, but it is the safest stroke to obviously survive. But I think breaststroke and freestyle are the most worthwhile strokes looking at. And unless you're racing,
I think fly's not
worth your time. And fly is also extremely difficult.
Yeah. I put that in just the context of like hurdles.
Right.
If you want to run for fitness, you don't need hurdles.
Nah, exactly. Yeah. Or like high jump or something.
Yeah, just run.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the last point to touch on there. Yeah. In terms of strokes, I think freestyle and breaststroke is where you'd want to invest your time into, I think. Okay. That sums it up. We don't have a swimming program, so you can't go to the mymuscleproject.com/swim. We do have a fitness program. So you can go to the mymuscleproject.com/fitness. You won't get any swimming in that. But I thought this was a useful episode anyway, just to talk about swimming, because it's definitely relevant in the context of exercise. So again, we talked about obviously our stories, total immersion swimming, and then like, I guess, swim squad. We talked about floating, breathing, obviously learning swimming as an adult versus learning it as a child, and the differences there. And then, yeah, fitness, recreational swimming, swim programming, and then the different strokes you'll need. So hopefully that was a useful episode for you guys. Hopefully it's entertaining. We'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.